Tonight we will conclude our study on the doctrine of God. As a matter of fact, there's not a lot left over for tonight. We have considered quite a few things altogether. We started out, of course, with answering the question, what is God? What is God? God is
infinite, eternal, and unchangeable in His being,
wisdom, power, holiness, justice, goodness, and truth. All right, so that's what we started out with, the nature and attributes of God. So, and then we looked at each one of these things individually. So we looked at the fact that God is a spirit, that God is infinite in His being, that God is eternal in His being, that God is unchangeable in His being, and then we looked at the fact that God is infinite, eternal, and changeable in His wisdom, power, holiness, justice, goodness, and truth. So then the second area that we looked at was the doctrine of the Trinity. And again, the Trinity is a very important doctrine because this is one area where we find that we have a problem with the cults. All right? So the key thing that you will find with the cults is a problem of the doctrine of the Trinity, in particular, the second person of the Trinity, because the cults generally will deny the deity of Christ, the fact that Jesus is God. So this is a very important unit, and you may say, well, all this theology, blah, 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 but there is practical applications, because if you have JWs come knocking on your door, some of them, come knocking on there, are you a Christian? Yes. Do you believe the Trinity? Yes. Can you show me the word Trinity in the Bible? And you can't find it because it isn't there. You mean you believe something that's not in the Bible? Well, the word is not in the Bible, but the teaching of the Trinity very clearly is in the Bible. And we looked at that. There's a Father who is God, there's a Son who is God, and there's a Spirit who is God. So we see the teaching very, very clearly in the Bible. So this is an important area, this matter of the Trinity. So after the Trinity, we looked at the decrees of God, or His eternal purpose according to the counsel of His will, whereby for His own glory He has foreordained whatsoever comes to pass. Alright, so whatsoever comes to pass has been foreordained by God. So that is what the decrees of God are. And then we concluded that section by the question, how does God execute His decrees? And the decrees of God, we see that He carries them out in creation and providence. So we've already looked at creation, and we have already finished part of providence. So because as we look at providence, we see actually that there are two areas there, preservation and government. So preservation we looked at last week, which means that tonight we need to look at government, and that's the last thing that we will consider then on the doctrine of God. So on page 19 in the notes, government, and we have the definition there, the biblical doctrine of providential government states that God continually controls and directs the actions of all His creatures according to the eternal and immutable plan embraced in His decree. So, the doctrine, the biblical doctrine of providential government. So, because this is taught clearly in the Bible, and God continually, not intermittently or once in a while or when He feels like it, but He continually controls the actions of His creatures. But not only does He control them, He also directs them. So there is direct guidance on the part of God. So He continually controls and directs the actions of all His creatures. All His creatures. So that includes us as human beings. And that, He says, is according to the eternal an immutable plan embraced in his decree. Because the decrees of God are his eternal purpose, according to the counsel of his will, whereby for his own glory he has foreordained whatsoever comes to pass. So it's an eternal plan, and it's an immutable plan. And if you remember, the word immutable means unchangeable. So there's an eternal plan that God had, and that plan is not only eternal, but it's also unchangeable. So, and that is all involved there. So what we're basically saying then on government is that God controls the actions of his creatures, us, and he directs our actions. All right? So we see that. Now, the biblical doctrine of providential government, the external world, rational and irrational creatures, all right, human beings would be considered rational creatures. Animals might be considered irrational creatures. Things great and small, doesn't matter how big or how small, ordinary, extraordinary, they are equally and always under the control of God. So, you know, the mosquito is under the control of God. You know, so sometimes tend to forget things like that. But it's all under God's control. And also note, secondly, that the government of God is powerful. His omnipotence renders certain the accomplishments of his designs, which embrace in their compass everything that occurs. So again, because he is omnipotent, because he is all-powerful, therefore whatever he has determined will be done. It will be accomplished. Now, if he was not all-powerful, he might not be able to carry it out. But because he is all-powerful, whatever he plans, whatever he purposes, will come to pass. So that's why it includes everything that occurs. That's because of his omnipotence. Not only because of his omnipotence, but we also note that the government of God is wise. All right, God is a spirit, infinite, eternal, and unchangeable in his deep wisdom. All right, so God is wisdom, God is wise. So the government of God is also then wise. This means not only that the ends which God has in view are consistent with his infinite wisdom, and that the means employed are wisely adapted to the respective objects, but also that his control is suited to the nature of the creatures over which it is exercised. So God then governs the world according to fixed laws which he himself established. So again, you see the working of God there. He is wise. So the ends which God has in view, ultimate purpose that he has in whatever is happening, is consistent with his wisdom. He'll never go against it. And also the means that God uses would be adapted to the respective objects. So it's all working together. So that's why his control is suited to the nature of the creatures over which it is exercised. Because when you look at different animals, they act differently. You know, but it all works together for the glory of God. But you see different animals, different creatures acting in different ways. You know, you see the fish swim in the sea, the birds fly in the air, not the other way around. I know you have flying fish, but that's something that's different, obviously. All right? So, but what you see is God has adapted these animals. You don't see penguins in the tropics. You know, just doesn't work. Now, if you go to Singapore and you go to the bird park, you may find some penguins there, but they keep them in an enclosed, cool environment with the air conditioning blasting full speed ahead because they've got to be kept relatively cool. So, you know, so even in Singapore, you may be able to see the, you know, some of the cold weather animals, but they are adapted to these different things. So you see some adapted for the tropics, some are adapted for the Arctic area, some are adapted for temperate climate, but it's all working together. And then God governed the world with the fixed laws which he himself established. You know, it's interesting when you look at some of these things, you know, because you have donkeys and you have horses, and if you have a donkey and a horse breeding together, you end up with a mule, but mules are sterile, so they cannot propagate themselves. All right? So again, God has set these certain laws. And we've mentioned already regarding the things like the earth rotating on its axis every 24 hours, revolving around the sun 365 and a quarter day, give or take a little bit. You know, so you see that, and this is how it rotates. You know, the moon rotating around the earth, but at the same rate, so it's always the same side of the moon towards the earth. You never see the back side of the moon. You know, so all these, but suppose that all of a sudden things started changing. You know, you look at the atmosphere. All right, what is it? Round figures. What is it? Some 16% or so oxygen, 80% nitrogen, give or take a little bit. You know, and if that percentage would change, you know, we'd have a real problem. So these are the things that God has set in place. You know, mentioned some of these things in last Sunday's church bulletin. And, you know, you might remember that, you know. So the egg of the potato bug hatch in 7 days. Canary, 14 days. The barnyard hen, 21 days. Ducks and geese, 28 days. The mallard, 35 days. The parrot and the ostrich, 42 days. They're all divisible by seven. And a dog, 63 days. The gestation period of a human being, 280 days. Again, it can be divided by seven. And when I read this, I said, what about the elephant? So I had to go to the internet to look up the gestation period of an elephant. It's 616 days. So I said, can you divide that by seven? And the answer is yes, 88. All right? So it comes out exactly. But that is the laws that God has put in place there in the universe. So that's a wonderful thing. So that's all things. God governed the world according to fixed laws which he himself established. And then also, D, we see that God's government is holy. God is a spirit, infinite, eternal, unchanged in his being, wisdom, power, holiness. All right? So God's government is holy. So there is nothing in the ends proposed or the means adopted or the agency employed which is inconsistent with his infinite holiness. So this all works together. So that's why we see it. The government of God is powerful, it is wise, it is holy. So all these things are under God's control. And then in conclusion, scriptural proof for the doctrine of providential government. We have a few Bible references here. First of all, in 1 Chronicles chapter 16 and verse 31. Let the heavens be glad, and let the earth rejoice, and let man say among the nations, the Lord reigneth. The Lord reigneth. He reigns. God is still on the throne. And he will remember his own. So God is in control. The Lord reigns. And then in the book of Psalms, a couple of references there. First of all, Psalm 47 and verse 7. Psalm 47 and verse 7. For God is the King of all the earth. Sing ye praises with understanding. God is the King of all the earth. What does the king do but rule and govern and control? So God is the king of all the earth. And then in Psalm 66 and verse 7. He ruleth by his power forever. His eyes behold the nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves. So he ruleth by his power forever. His absolute power, because he is all powerful. And then, Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turneth it whithersoever he will. So he turneth it. That's the king's heart within the context. So the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. All right. As the rivers of water, he turneth that king's heart whithersoever he will. Because he is in control. He governs. So he controls the kings like he controls everything else. And then the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 2, verses 20 and 21. Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changes the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding." But you see that? He removes kings and sets up kings. Because he is in control. He governs. So he puts kings there. He removes kings. So he is absolutely in control of everything. Another reference in Daniel chapter 4 and verse 25. "That they shall drive thee from men, and thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee, till thou know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men, and giveth it to whomsoever he will." All right, remember Nebuchadnezzar eating grass. All right, so that's the passage here. But what does he say? "Till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will." So he rules, he governs. So that's the doctrine of providential government. And then one reference in the New Testament to the book of James. James chapter 4, verses 13 to 15. "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanishes away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that." So if God is willing, then we'll do this, then we'll do that. Because he is in control. He governs. So it's not a question of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You know, man proposes, but God disposes. So we can make our plans. But God is still in control. So the Lord will, then we will do this, or we will do that. Well, with that then, we conclude our study of the doctrine of God. And we trust that this has been a helpful study, as we have looked at a number of different areas. Now, in theology, there are basically seven areas. All right, there's the introduction to theology, where we cover revelation and inspiration in particular. The second area is the doctrine of God. The third area is the doctrine of man. Then you go to the doctrine of Christ, doctrine of salvation, and then the last two are the doctrine of the church and the doctrine of the last things. So the next area that we want to look at is the doctrine of man, or if you want a fancy term for that, biblical anthropology. All right, anthropology, or the study of man. Anthropos, the Greek word for man. So we will be looking together at that. The notes are almost finished for that. There's one section that I'm trying to see how much or how little to put in there. Because I have quite extensive notes on that, but I think they're too complex, and I want to make it a little bit simpler. So some of these notes I need to adjust for that. But as we look at the doctrine of man, we will begin with the original state of man. Man created in the image of God. What do we mean by man being created in the image of God? So we will consider that. Then after that, we'll look at the nature of man. And basically, what we will look at there is the question, is man made up of two parts or three parts? All right. Question, is man body, soul, and spirit three parts, or is he, you know, a material part and an immaterial part? So we will look at that particular issue. There's one area that I have decided to leave out of the notes, and that's the question on the origin of the soul. I think simply stated, we get our souls from God, so I don't think we need to put a lot of time on that. And there's all kind of fancy views. Theologians come up with three different views on the origin of the soul. They use big words for that. You know, the pre-existence of the soul, then there's traducianism, and there's creationism. But we're not going to spend any time on that. So I've decided to leave that out. But instead, we'll go on to the covenant of works. Now, for those of us that are studying the 2 o'clock class in Genesis, some of these things may be a little bit of review, but at the same time, we'll be going deeper into it than we did during the Genesis class. But the covenant of works, okay, goes back, of course, to the Garden of Eden. All right? Where God put Adam and Eve in the garden, and he said, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. So we will talk about that covenant that God made. We'll look at that. And then having looked at that, we will look at the fall. And again, of course, you know that's in chapter 3 in the book of Genesis. So we will look at that in more detail. Again, we looked at it when we looked at Genesis chapter 3, but now we'll look at it kind of like the same subject. We look at it from a different side, and we will consider that. And then the last area that we want to look at is the matter of sin. All right, and that again is an important subject. And we might just say, well, sin is sin. You know, what do I need to know about sin? But again, there's a lot of implications there. You know, and one of the area that I'm working on right now is how is Adam's sin passed on to us. That's quite a detailed study, and I want to leave a lot of the extraneous things out because I don't think it's really necessary to know all the fine points on Pelagianism and semi-Pelagianism. I think that is not necessary, but there are actually four views there. But three of them have to be rejected, so there's only one biblical view. So I just want to go through the notes and just put down what the Bible teaching is without, you know, going into the details as to why we reject Pelagianism or semi-Pelagianism. You know, and you don't even have to worry about remembering those names. But that's where, you know, part of the doctrine of sin. How is sin passed on from Adam to us? And we say it's an immediate imputation of Adam's sin to us. But we will look at these things. So that is what we'll be beginning next week, the Lord willing, as we look at the original state of man. So that gives you some idea as to what we will be doing then. And I think with that, we conclude early for tonight. But we'll conclude this. So if you want to turn this off. So we'll ask Ian if he will distribute the prayer request for tonight.